Business Class is brought to you by the Tourism Academy, harnessing the power of science, business psychology, and adult education to advance the tourism industry and build sustainable economies. Learn how to engage your community, win over stakeholders, and get more visitors at tourismacademy.org.
Steve Ekstrom, host of the Business Class podcast from the Tourism Academy. Today's guest, Kristen Reynolds, president and CEO of Discover Long Island. I got to meet you briefly at the DI conference in Toronto not too long ago. And you're also on the Destinations International board. What does it mean to you to be a member of the board and to be a leader in the industry?
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to see you again. And I was just going to say, I'm just newly elected. Starting in January, will be on the board. And I can't tell you, it's such an incredible honor for me. It's something that, you know, to be amongst my peers on that level and for my destination of Long Island, New York, to have a voice on that national and global scale. It's really an incredible opportunity, and I think it's a very important responsibility, and I take it with a lot of gravity and a lot of gratitude.
What is the biggest misconception people have about Long Island?
I think most people think that it's small. I think, you know, I'm not from Long Island. I moved here 7 years ago from Arizona for the position of the CEO. And I actually had no idea about Long Island. So I can tell you, I was one of those misconceptions. I didn't even know the Hamptons were on Long Island. And I think it's amazing. A lot of people don't. People think the Hamptons are somewhere in the Northeast with the Catskills and Martha's Vineyard. But they're here and they're on Long Island. And when you look at it on a map, it looks like so tiny, but it's actually 120 miles long. And it's enormous. It's 3.5 million people, not including Brooklyn and Queens, which, by the way, technically on Long Island, because you don't cross a bridge to go there. And it's really massive, and it's made up of two counties and 119 different towns, villages, and hamlets. And we have 120 different chambers of commerce. It's really this big island that is made up of, I always say, like a mosaic of a bunch of very small village, kind of Mayberry type communities. So it's wonderful.
How is Long Island like where you grew up?
Oh my gosh, it's absolutely nothing like where I grew up. Other than the part that maybe there's like a small town vibe, because I actually grew up in Midland, Texas, which is West Texas, which is, in fact, the claim to fame for Midland. If you don't know, when I was in high school, my junior year in high school is when the Friday Night Lights series was written. It was written about my high school, one of them that lost the coin toss in the football team. So kind of iconic there. But just this, maybe the small town vibe that we have, and maybe that's what draws me to it. I really like being in a city and having all of the urban opportunities and being, you know, accessible right here to New York City is the greatest thing in the world. But also feeling like, you know, I go to my Starbucks and or my bagel shop and they know me, and I went to the wine bar last night and she knows my favorite order. And there's something really homey and familiar and community driven about Long Island and where I grew up.
What are three words you hope your staff would use to describe you?
I hope they would describe me as kind, trustworthy, and passionate. And I just did an event, a panel, where my whole staff was there, and they can kind of see me on display for the entire industry. And I always try to exude those characteristics.
Where do you think you get that from?
I don't know. I think I've evolved into that. I mean, I certainly don't think I grew up, you know, being kind. Passion is something I've always had. And I think, honestly, I've met a lot of people. I think passion is something you're born with, to be honest. And you know, and it's not just because you found what you love to do. I mean, I always say my first passion, if I could have done anything in the world, I wanted to be a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. And I didn't come anywhere close to that. So it doesn't, right? I mean, it doesn't mean that you just happen to be passionate about what you're doing, because I think passion is something you're born with and maybe comes out of, I grew up in a family with a single mom, and I didn't have everything. And I had a lot of friends in the oil business, and I got to see, lives around me. And I think that created the ambition and the drive that I have is knowing what the possibilities were for achievement. So, and as far as being, kind and trustworthy, I think I've grown into those in my more mature age, because you realize how important it is to be treated with kindness. When people treat me with kindness, it means the world to me, and it really it impacts my day. Every time, it doesn't matter who you are in the industry, or again, like the person, my barista. And being trustworthy is something, again, I've seen the good and the bad of that. And so I obviously want to emulate that, because I was a lobbyist in Arizona right before I took this job, and trust is everything when you do a job like that. Once it's gone, and once you're not, people don't believe in your words, you're done in that industry. So I think those things I've learned in my experience along the way.
You said you grew up with a single mom. What's something that you learned from her that you take with you to work every day?
My mom, I would say tenacity. I don't want to say it in a negative way, but my mom is a single mom back in, the late 80s, early 90s with, not a great career. She was a hustler. she never put anything past my mom, and sometimes good and bad. But she made things happen. And never underestimate her. And I really take that with me. My mom's biggest aspiration for me growing up her dream for me would just be a flight attendant. Mostly just because, she couldn't even fathom me being a CEO or being in a position like this back when I was in West Texas and she was just trying to make ends meet. But she wanted me to see the world. She knew it was a big world out there, and she wanted me to have that experience. So she did everything in her power to make it happen. So I think a lot of people underestimate, me sometimes, or even my destination and the power of my destination and my team and what we can accomplish. And I accept that challenge.
So your mom wanted you to be a flight attendant. If somebody had asked you when you were a kid what you wanted to be when you grew up, aside from a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, mm-hmm. where would you have seen yourself?
It's a good question, but I would have no idea. I don't even know. I wasn't that kid that, other than being a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, and then when my mom said flight attendant, I was like, sure, that sounds good. I like everybody in our industry, I really fell into this field. I remember going to my dad, my mom had split up and he was in Arizona. So he was like, I want you to come and go to Arizona State. And so that's why I went to Arizona State, because my dad said, you should come here. And I wasn't like, I was like this great, had this vision. And then back in that day, and then again, I'm showing my age, I had to go to community college first to get residency for like a year. And there was just a brochure rack of majors, and each major had the kinds of classes you would take for those majors. And I was flipping through them. I had no clue what I wanted to do. And I narrowed it down to journalism and public relations or social work. Those were the two things the two brochures I picked up. And my dad ripped the social work one out of my hand and put it back. And he was like, absolutely not. I'm not going to pay for you for the rest of your life. Turns out you're going to major in journalism. So that's what I did.
If you could point out something that's in the room with you now that means a lot to you, what is it and how would you describe it?
It's probably cliche to say, but honestly, there's a picture of my two daughters, right, that I look at every day. And they have been my inspiration. Everything I do is for them. And when I moved to Long Island by myself, I moved with them. I was a single mom with my, at the time, third and sixth grade. And I came here for two reasons. My my daughters and my career ambitions, and they gave up as much as I did to leave all of our friends and family and everything they've ever known and loved in Arizona to give me this opportunity. And they are my biggest fans and my biggest critics. And you know, that's why they get Taylor Swift tickets.
Did you get them? Oh,
I did. Oh my gosh. It was so crazy. My youngest daughter, they're now 15 and 18. And my oldest daughter is back at Arizona State. Okay. As a freshman. So she was calling on FaceTime 2 hours earlier, and my little one took the day off of school, and everyone's screaming at each other, click the button. I know. So we got them, thank God, because I would never hear the end of it.
What's a memory that always makes you laugh?
Oh my gosh, these are crazy questions. You know, a memory that always makes me laugh, I'll tell you, it's funny. I tell this story a lot to my daughters and younger people, is not everything works out the way you think it will. And so a great memory is when I was at Arizona State, I would volunteer for the Fiesta Bowl. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. We would drive the courtesy cars for whatever team, and we got to drive the cars. And so my dream at that time was to work for the Fiesta Bowl. I wanted to do PR for them. So I had an interview. When I graduated, I was working for a PR agency, and I had an interview for the Fiesta Bowl for their communications manager. And this was so important to me, and I was so nervous and excited. And they said, tell us three things about yourself. And I said something like, you know, I'm dependable, I'm, you know, probably passionate, and I'm focused. And they were like, great, now go back and tell us why you're all of those things. And I went this whole thing, dependable, passionate. And then I just completely blanked, and I'm like, I'm so sorry, I forgot the third thing I said. And they were like, focused. And I'm like, right. Thank you for the interview. Thank you for your time. You know? And so obviously I did not get the job, and I was crushed, and I was so disappointed in myself, and I felt like a failure. And fast forward, then I ended up getting the job at the Arizona Office of Tourism through like luck. And I guess, you know, women always say that luck, but really like perseverance. And 5 years later, the woman who had gotten the job at the Fiesta Bowl was interviewing to be my manager at the Arizona Office of Tourism. And she was incredible. And I brought her in, and she was like, I mean, she was so amazing. She was overqualified. But she was like, you know, just the same, it's the same thing every single year for 5 years. It's the Fiesta Bowl every year. And I want to expand my horizons. And I thought it was an out of body experience, right? I was like, wow, everything happens for a reason.
So you mentioned that women always say luck, but really it was perseverance. What's a piece of advice that you would have for women, especially, who are in the destinations industry?
Yes. And it's so funny because I just came from a women's conference where I was on the panel of women in leadership, and it was so inspiring. And I love hearing from other women and learning from them. And I think the one thing we were all kind of saying in that panel, and I'll just repeat it here. These are, you know, the words of my peers. And they said, don't be limited by fear. Don't be afraid to take risks and to do things and to say where you should be, where you belong, and believe in yourself. And I think that's really true. I mean, there's been a couple of uncomfortable moments where I've had the opportunity, and I'm very privileged, but someone will call me and say, are you interested in this other position? And I'm like, I want to go bigger next to me. You know, I'm good on Long Island, but the next thing I want to do, it should be really big. And I feel like I could do it, you know, but I think a lot of people are afraid or don't believe in themselves. And there's a fine line of, you know, believing in yourself and knowing your capabilities, and not being cocky, you know, or egomaniac or anything like that. But I just think that a lot of times women, we limit ourselves.
How would you like the people in your community to describe the work that you do and your organization does?
And again, I just had this experience earlier, a minute ago, and it was so great after I spoke, and so many people that I've never met before came up to me afterwards and they said, thank you so much for what you do. And I would like for my community, what I would hope that they see from our work is that we love Long Island, that we are grateful to have the opportunity and the responsibility of being Long Island ambassadors, and that we care about promoting the place that they live and that they call home in the best way that we can, and that we make them proud to live here.
Is there anything I didn't ask that you wish that I did?
And I know you do this every time. I've listened to your podcast and I was like thinking about it, but I didn't know what you were going to ask me. So I should have been prepared for this. I don't think so. You asked some really interesting questions that are completely out of the box of a typical tourism podcast. So I appreciate it, I guess. I don't know. I'm trying to think if there was something you didn't ask.
Is there anything you'd like to ask me?
Yes. Is there anything that surprised you today from this interview?
You know, I've spent time on Long Island, and it was great to hear you reiterate some of those commonalities that it has with small towns. And the fact that it's big. You know, people don't realize it takes a couple hours to get from one end to the other. And, you know, that was great to hear. It was great to hear, too, about your endeavors in leadership and why that's important to you. So thank you.
Thank you. And I was so grateful when you reached out to me. But how do you choose who you want to speak to on your podcast? Because I have a podcast, too, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've listened, but it's interesting. And sometimes you get a lot of people that want to be on your podcast, but you're like, you know, they're the right fit. So how do you make that decision? I would love to learn from you.
Sure. So there are two concepts that go into where the podcast came from. First and foremost is that there's a lot of media about place, about things to do, activities, product. But when we get together, people who work in tourism, we say it's about the people. So where are we learning about the people who make places worth visiting? That is first and foremost. Second, you know, it was talked about at the DI conference that there is a gap in the leadership pipeline. And tourism has had its challenges from a workforce development standpoint. And of the 100 or so interviews that I've given, I think there may be only two that said this is what they wanted to do when they grew up. Most say they fell into the industry. So I think that there's an opportunity for us to show others that there are meaningful careers that are fulfilling, that are satisfying and dynamic and diverse within the industry. And if that's something that we can do, we are a nonprofit, we are focused solely on education. And if that's something that we can do to educate future leaders, we're down for it.
That's awesome. I think, you know, an interesting question that, and for me and maybe for other people that have children, because again, my daughter's in college, my other daughter's getting ready to go to college, is would you advise your children to follow in your footsteps? And I have to be honest, as much as I love my career and I love what I've done, I wouldn't advise them to do it. And I think that it's a very, very difficult, increasingly difficult and thankless industry. And I think that the heydays of some of our former leaders, you know, that they were able to experience are gone. And it's so scrutinized and so difficult. My daughters have seen me go through that. You know, it's a very public figure position without the public figure power that most public figures have. And, you know, I'm glad there's organizations like yours out there that can, you know, talk about the future of our industry and help us evolve, because I really do sometimes wonder in the next 10 years where we'll be.
Politics is a commonality, I think, with a lot of the DMO leaders. You know, you have to be able to manage that as well as you are managing emotional intelligence, managing people, managing budgets. and whatnot. And I know for a fact, I'm not good at it. I couldn't
it's so
do
hard.
It. Oh, I
it's
couldn't
so
do
hard.
It.
Hard.
Do you think that that's unique to your destination? Or do you think that that's pretty common? The impact of that is common throughout.
I know it's common, and I can tell you because I've been in, you know, two very different destinations, Arizona tourism for over 20 years and here, and it's not dissimilar. And it doesn't matter how ingrained you are and how successful you are, how many awards you win, how much data you use, how much ROI you generate. It takes one, you know, new elected official, and the, you know, there's elections every 2 years, and it takes one, you know, newspaper columnist or one squeaky, you know, art gallery owner that says they don't do anything for me to completely derail. And it's, you know, with those destinations, I heard Martha Sheridan on yours, those destinations that have been savvy enough to get private funding are the ones that I think will continue to thrive and succeed. But for those of us who have not yet achieved that status yet, which I think should be every single person's objective, is to privatize, because I don't know about the public funding. People just don't get it. They don't understand why public dollars, even though they're generated from our industry, should go towards marketing. And, you know, when there's inflation and people are suffering and people need help from their governments, the average citizen's never going to understand why we should advertise with taxpayer dollars when they could, you know, lower their tax bill or whatever it is. And so I feel like the future of that is tumultuous, but and consistent with everybody that doesn't have that privatized funding.
That's a good point.
So we could talk about that all day.
We really could, but I know you've got a busy schedule, and we are approaching a holiday week. So thank you for taking the time to chat with me. I appreciate you, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. I'm thankful for this opportunity and for our industry and my incredible peers, like you talked about, in tourism. It's what makes it worth doing this every year and every day.
Same to you.